second case for oral argument this morning is the people in the state of South Dakota in the interest of ZB. And for the appellant ZB, we have Ms. Stacy Rendell, is that correct?
Rendell,
okay. Wow, that's close. And Ms. Francie Oral. Ms. Rendell, I understand you'll be doing the argument this morning. All right. And for the state of South Dakota, we have Mr. John Strowman, Assistant Attorney General from Peer. Ms. Rendell, you may proceed. You have 20 minutes.
May it please the court, Mr. Strowman. This morning I'd like to focus on three main points to illustrate the argument that ZB's rights have been violated pursuant to the implication and application of the dispositional order of Judge John Bastian, requiring him to register as a sex offender pursuant to 2224B for the rest of his life.
The judge didn't have any discretion, did he? I mean, that the statute simply requires that if he adjudicates a juvenile of this offense, then there has to be a lifetime registration. Is that right?
That's correct, Justice Konenkamp. In fact, at the dispositional hearing, Judge Bastian indicated that he was troubled by the implications of 2224B on him and had an opinion about the possible constitutionality of such, but that he had no choice. In fact, the direct statutory conflict that I submit is created by Title 26, what we all consider the juvenile justice sections of our code, and sections of 2224B, specifically 26.7A, 27, and 28, are in conflict with the application then of 2224B 2 and 10. In that, pursuant to Title 26, your average everyday citizen, your neighbor down the street, is prohibited from access to juvenile record information. An individual can't sit in a juvenile hearing, absent compelling reasons found by the court. Your average citizen cannot obtain law enforcement records about a juvenile proceeding, absent four specific exceptions that are not at all applicable here. And pursuant to 26, 27A, 28, the public is prohibited from any identifying information about a juvenile absent, again, specific findings and order of the court that would require compelling reasons. But pursuant to the provisions of 2224B, specifically 2 and 10, your average everyday citizen, your neighbor down the street, can sit at his computer, type in sor.sd.gov, and up on his screen with two more keystrokes, hitting continue and hitting any county in our state, not only is a juvenile, but more importantly, my client ZB's identifying information, including his name, address, descriptions of height and weight, and his face, can be seen by any citizen in our state. They can put a face to the name.
You know, the legislature has, in other areas, opened up the protection, the privacy protection of juveniles in areas such as, in the last, I don't know, 5-10 years, maybe a little longer. They've given information to schools. And as far as that goes, I think the statute even says other interested parties. What prohibits the legislature from enacting conflicting statutes that allow privacy to some extent but disallow it to another extent? Why can't the legislature do that?
Justice Inter, I submit that while the legislature has opened up what I call the umbrella of protection of privacy for juveniles, in doing so more recently, as you pointed out, it has done so to schools, to law enforcement agencies, to Department of Social Services, or what they, I believe the phrase they use is, other interested parties concerned with the privacy and the well-being of the juvenile. The biggest concern that I have in the violation of ZB's rights is the complete opening of that privacy umbrella, basically eradicating it, in that there is now public, not only public access, but
well, after 2006. I understand that, but what I'm saying and what I'm asking is, what prohibits the legislature from doing that, if that's what they want to do?
I believe that there's a prohibition against the conflict that's created by the statute based on both due process and equal protection protections, both from the state and the federal constitution, in that specifically for juveniles, the due process protections that are afforded to adults in this state, possibly even some other juveniles, are that there is at least an opportunity to have reconsideration of the appropriateness of that such registration.
And okay, then are you, so you're suggesting, well, let me ask you, are you relying on substantive due process or procedural due process?
Both, honestly, Your Honor. And it goes to two different issues that the violations have created by the application of 24B2 and 10. In that, 2224B2 specifically requires a 15-year-old adjudicated of three specific sex crimes in our state of registering for his lifetime. And it doesn't use the word lifetime in any part of 2224B, except that in other portions of that same statute, it allows for the exceptions for example, adults that get suspended positions. Or it allows for certain provisions if you have certain crimes that you meet four specific criteria, and then you can petition the circuit court. There is no mechanism afforded ZB in light of his specific facts of his case and his age that ever give him the possibility of procedural due process to be...
Say that your client had been bound over and tried as an adult, even though he was under 18, so he's got an adult felony conviction. Do you have a constitutional problem with that because he's under 18?
I do not, Your Honor, and that, in fact, that is my specific point. 26114 is the mechanism afforded the state to have the ZBs of our system on a sex offender registry legally, in that if a prosecutor feels that the facts of the child and the facts of the case merit consideration, and the court feels that it is contrary to that child's best interest to remain in the juvenile justice system and that of the public's, he then changes status from that of a child to that of a defendant, to that of an adult in criminal court.
So it's really, you're talking about status, not numerical age.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. And because in this specific case, the state's attorney, being fully aware of the provisions of 26114 and not availing of the state for that because of his knowledge of these specific facts, as the state's arm, he petitioned the child into the juvenile court system. And so for another provision of our statute to strip that child away from that child designation, having no procedural due process rights to have that considered, despite the fact that the state and the judge himself deemed that status to remain, is in violation of his rights.
Well, then, how do you distinguish Connecticut Department of Public Safety versus Dole?
Your Honor, Connecticut is a fact-specific case. In 2005, the United States Supreme Court dealt with two specific issues, and one of them was in Connecticut. And in that statute, there are at least different hierarchies that are set up by that state regarding not only the juvenile registration, but also the information and the access to the public that is afforded, which is likened to that of not only Megan's Laws, but also what is now considered the Adam Walsh Act. And that state statute specifically was, the question was whether or not the protections afforded by that statute or statutes affords enough protection and due process in that not only the registration, but also the access and then the possibility of removal. South Dakota has absolutely no provisions that even allow a court or a tribunal or an agency to consider the specific facts of the juvenile in terms of access.
But Doe said you're not entitled to any hearing, period. Start, beginning, end. There's no such right. That's what Doe said.
But there is a mechanism in their statute that already puts in place a tiers, a level of offenders, if you will, Your Honor.
I guess I understand that, but what Doe said was that it's immaterial. The procedural due process is immaterial, at least the way I read it.
And I'm not disagreeing with your interpretation, Justice. But the distinction that I put out there is that because of 2224B and its comprehensive nature and its complete lack of classification of the juvenile as a juvenile versus an adult, that we don't even get to the point of acknowledging that a procedure at any way, not even a hearing, is afforded or is an entitlement of a juvenile. And specifically in this state, because of the broad scope of Title 26, which mandates that children and any adjudication or disposition of them be under the scope of best interests, with that mandate, I don't think there's any choice but to afford ZB, based on his specific facts and the crime for which he admitted, some due process to have consideration of the risk that supposedly that these statutes are meant to assist, and what his specific status is.
If we agree with you that a child is entitled to a due process hearing on their status, don't we also then have to consider whether every sex offender in South Dakota should be likewise entitled to the same type of due process hearing, because they may also have arguments saying, you know, I shouldn't be on the list for the rest of my life. I ought to have a hearing of every few years to see if I'm still dangerous, if I still pose a risk.
I would first like to point out that unlike ZB, many of the adults in South Dakota that are forced to register pursuant to 23A17, if they get a suspended imposition of sentence, they have to mail a piece of paper to DCI and they're off. So that opportunity is not afforded to ZB or any other juvenile 15 or older with this statute.
I'm talking about the ones that don't have that suspended imposition of sentence. I'm talking about all the I don't know how many we have now, but wouldn't we also have to give the same due process hearing to all offenders, not just juvenile offenders, if we were to agree with your position that that each person's case is individual?
Justice, I feel there is a distinction between an adult and a child or a juvenile pursuant to the entire framework of our statutory laws.
So if he commits a rape one day before his 18th birthday, he gets, under your theory, protection of the juvenile code, and if somebody else commits it one day after 18, there's only 2 days difference, and he's an adult, and it's out of luck.
That is a potential consequence, Justice, and that is no different than any other application of any other crime statute in our state. I liken it to, and this extends to the equal protection argument. Presently in this state, it is possible that we have a 14-year-old that is 14 years old and 364 days that committed the exact same crime as EB, and he is not subject to the sexual registration laws of this state. One day. I further argue that in addition to the suspended imposition possibility for adults to be removed and no longer have this lifetime branding, we also have, because of the inequities of the statutory system currently, we have 16-year-olds, someone that's older than ZB, that may have committed murder or aggravated assault or robbery, that because, at least at this point, because those crimes are not the crime du jour of our nation, that they're down the street from me, possibly with me having absolutely no information about them. And so if, in fact, the public interest is protection of society, I argue that it's actually just in name only, because we are then supposedly protecting our citizens from a small cluster of children that, at this point, we have absolutely no determination by a court or a professional that he actually poses a risk to anyone.
Well, I mean, the legislature has the power to decide which types of offenders pose a greater risk, and they certainly can say that sex offenders pose a very certain and particular risk to children, and designate those for public registration, as opposed to, say, someone who commits an assault or a robbery. That's their. We can't interfere with that, can we?
I agree with that, Justice. But because of the designation or lack thereof by our legislation or legislature currently, I propose that the specific public policy goal created by the legislature in creating this sexual offender registry is very, I mean, it honestly, to me, is a hollow attempt to remedy a risk that, first of all, hasn't been ascertained and maybe hits.
Well, we're not in the business of we don't judge legislation. We don't, we may think the legislation is idiotic, but that, you know, or hollow as you use it. But that isn't our standard. We are obedient to the Constitution, and you have to show us where in the Constitution does this statute, where does it offend the Constitution?
And that goes to the heart of the due process argument and the equal protection argument, Justice, in that I am proposing that CB has a legitimate liberty interest in privacy and confidentiality, and that liberty interest is afforded him by direct legislation, pieces of Title 26.
Let me pose another question to you, and it's a question I'm going to ask the state too. What's really concerning me here is equal protection. A circuit judge in South Dakota can sentence a 35-year-old rapist and give that rapist the opportunity to have his record cleared and have no registration for the rest of his life. But a circuit judge who sentences or has a disposition for a 15-year-old rapist doesn't have that discretion. So I'd like you to address that. Why is that not a denial of equal protection, that a 15-year-old has to be registered for the rest of his life, but a 35-year-old does not?
That's exactly my point, Justice Incher. I think it is clear that the Equal Protection Clause of the state and federal constitution clearly prohibits the creation of these classes, which I feel to be completely arbitrary. And obviously, you may argue there is a valid legislative purpose for the registries themselves, but I don't feel that based on the creation of this class, the class that ZB fits in, that we then have a result that is disproportionate, in that we have similarly situated people, ZB 15 and a 35-year-old, that have committed the exact same crime.
All right, so I agree with you. There seems to be a gross inequity between the hypothetical 35-year-old rapist and the 15-year-old rapist. The 15-year-old gets won't call it a punishment, but they get a status, as you say, that's far more harsh than the 35-year-old, who may have committed exactly the same offense. But, you know, we have to, there's a process. When we do an equal protection analysis, we have to go through a process. Take us through that. How do we analyze this under the equal protection analysis that this court and the United States Supreme Court has used?
I would first of all submit that an arbitrary class has been created by the legislature. With the divergence of the treatment, as you just stated. And I submit that there are classifications beyond even just a 15-year-old and adult. The classifications extend to a 15-year-old and a 14-year-old that have committed the same crime. A 15-year-old and that has committed this crime, and a 15-year-old that has committed the crime of murder, for example. In doing so, then, once I purport that there is this arbitrary classification that has been set up by our statutes, we then, after we've decided that they are similarly situated individuals, the analysis then goes to a distinction that must have some relevance to the purpose for which the classification was made.
Is it a rational basis analysis we use, or does it have to be a compel? Which analysis do we use? There are several that you use in these types of cases.
Strict scrutiny is to be determined when there is a classification that is set up that is arbitrary. And in this situation, I submit that whether you perform the strict scrutiny analysis or whether you do the rational relationship between the classification and the stated purpose that it serves. In either of those analyses, you come up with the exact same result, in that the distinction that is created by the statute, it has no relevance to any stated legitimate government interest. I would like to also point out that the irony of the distinctions that you just pointed out, Justice Incher, also cannot be lost on the fact that because of this registry and the publication of it in 2006, I had to white out a picture of my own client, an appendix to my brief. Yet anybody in about 15 seconds can pull up his face on the internet because of the additional safeguards our statute provides for confidentiality of juvenile proceedings.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Reiner.
Thank you.
Mr. Strowman, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Justice. Please, the court, counsel. My name is John Strowman. I'm the Assistant Attorney General representing the state of South Dakota. I want to briefly touch on the standard of review of this case, as well as how this court examines constitutional challenges. I also want to touch on the specifics of the sex offender registry as its uniqueness with reference to adults as to juveniles. And finally, I'd like to walk through each of the issues that have been raised. When there's a claim of a violation of a constitutional right, it's evaluated by de novo standard by this court. In the same way with the question of statutory interpretation. Constitutional evaluation, the court has held in Allison that there's a strong presumption that the statute is constitutional. And it will not be found to be unconstitutional even if it is determined that the policy is unwise, unsound, or unnecessary. As Justice Konenkamp had pointed out earlier, it is repugnant to the Constitution, it says under Allison, when it is plainly and unmistakably shown to be. In Zeebe's brief, there is a concept throughout that we are registering juveniles for life. It's important to recognize that in the sex offender registry, there is approximately 17 adult crimes, if committed in South Dakota, that are subject to registration, plus the fact each of their attempts, so 34. As for a juvenile, if they are 15 years of age or older, there are three. And that would be rape, promotion of prostitution of a minor, and felony sexual contact with an individual incapable of consenting. It is also important to realize that among the adult sex offenders, they are all registered for life with one exception, and that is statutory rape, well, and its attempt. And then only they're subject to registration for a minimum of 10 years, and if the perpetrator was 21 years of age or younger, and the victim 13 years of age or older, if some other requirements were met, then they can petition to be removed from the registry.
Is that the only category that can petition to be removed?
It is, Your Honor. Juveniles, these three crimes that I mentioned earlier, all three of them have the same rights. They, all three, can petition to be removed from the sex offender registry after 10 years. Why is ZB registered for life? Because ZB attacked a victim that was 13 years of age or younger. That is why ZB is subject to lifetime registration.
But let me understand something before you
go further. Yes, Your Honor.
Going back to my 15 and 35-year-old economy, the judge in this case, if he had a 35-year-old person in front of him who committed the same crime that ZB committed, could have his name off the sex registration list if the judge had given him a suspended imposition of judgment, and he completed that probationary period.
That's right, Your Honor. The 34-year-old would be required to register during the time of probation, and not until there was a formal discharge of the suspended imposition would they be able then to be removed from the from the registrar.
But ZB won't have that opportunity.
ZB will not have that opportunity.
Right. And why is that not a denial of equal protection? Why
All
is
right.
it that a 35-year-old adult gets a break and a 15-year-old is marked for the rest of his life?
All right. Your Honor, I guess I'd like to walk through the equal protection analysis that you had requested earlier. First of all, as this Court talked about, if there's a fundamental right involved, strict scrutiny is involved. I cited MAH for the proposition that neither sex offenders nor juvenile sex offenders are a suspect classification for equal protection purposes. Then, does it involve gender or legitimacy as to whether there's a substantial relationship test? That doesn't apply here either. When it's not a fundamental right, when it's not intermediate scrutiny, there's a rational basis test. The rational basis test determines whether, one, is there an arbitrary class? And secondarily, if there is determined there's an arbitrary class, is there a rational relationship between the class and a legitimate state purpose? Here, at one point, ZB in an argument stated there wasn't a class here. All right? I would maintain that there is sex offenders, to which ZB, as a juvenile sex offenders are part of the whole group of sex offenders generally. I do not agree that there is a class that has been set up. And the reason I suggest that in the cases I cite is Minders, which stated that there, as the argument was brought, that there was some penal difference between the two. Sex offender registry is not a penal, but a remedial response. Since there is not this classification based on a particular judgment, but more of a remedial class, I don't believe a class has been meant.
Let's assume we agree with you partially, but we say that registration at least has a stigma. What is the rational basis that the state has for saying that a child convicted of this offense at 15 automatically must be a lifetime registered offender, and a 35-year-old commits the exact same offense doesn't have to be a lifetime registered offender? What's the rational basis for such a classification?
Well, first of all, there's obviously no guarantee that individual will receive a suspended imposition of sentence.
But he has the opportunity. The child
has
no opportunity.
Thank you. You're right, Your Honor. He has the opportunity. But that same 34-year-old also has the opportunity of being subject to a Class C felony for doing exactly what ZB did and potentially receiving a life sentence. And
let's just talk about the sex offender registration. I realize there's other things, but we're talking here about registration. What is the rational reason the state would have for saying you, 15-year-old boy, are going to be registered for the rest of your life as a sex offender, but you, 35-year-old rapist, no, we're going to give you a break. After 2 years, you're done, you take your name off. What
All right.
reason would this legislature have for making such a distinction automatically?
In Minders, this court set forth the purpose of the legislature, and it said the regulatory purpose of assisting law enforcement in identifying, tracking sex offenders to prevent future sex offenders, especially those against children, to alert the public in the interest of community safety, and to prevent and properly resolve incidents involving sex offenders. It was stated in that opinion that the overriding aim of this statute is to protect children from sex offenders. That is what the legislature set forth as its reason, as its rational basis for that distinction. How a court decides whether or not to grant a suspended imposition of sentence, I can't comment on. But that is the legislature's position with reference to why we have a sex offender registry and its rational basis.
Even the judge in this case, as I understand it, if maybe I'm reading between the lines and you can tell me if I'm getting off base here, but even the judge in this case said, you know, I have no choice. I wouldn't do this. I wouldn't require him to be registered for the rest of his life. I have no choice. I have to do it. The law says I have to. But the judge could do it for a 35-year-old. So, I mean, here we have, I understand this registration list is an important thing. It protects children. I'm not saying that's a problem. My problem is, why are we saying we're going to have 15-year-olds automatically registered, and the judge who looks at a 35-year-old says, wait a minute, no, you're not really that much of a danger. I think if you finish your probation, you're going to be okay. You can't do it for a 15-year-old.
I would like to start with your premise where you're mentioning Judge Bastian's comments.
Yes.
And that would be in the dispositional hearing, page 4. And I'll read from page 15 of ZB's reply brief. In his brief, he states, additionally, the sentencing court believed that there was no alternative but to order ZB to register. In fact, the court specifically stated, quote, I still feel that there are parts of the process that are not only unfortunate, but are a violation of ZB's constitutional rights as a juvenile. And I will, I guess for purposes of that, specify that in terms of our statute, including particularly 2224B2, which requires a 15-year-old to register for the rest of his life as a sex offender, is based on allegations that he admitted to. If the court goes back and reviews the dispositional hearing, at least the copy that I received, those are not the comments of the court. Those are the comments of counsel at that hearing. More specifically, the comments of the judge come later, which said, I find no other resolve other than to send this individual to DOC. Those were the comments of the court. So,
did the order, though, require him to register?
Absolutely.
And does that is that necessary?
Pardon?
What if the judge didn't order it?
There would obviously be a violation of the statute.
Which brings me to another question that's been bothering me. Normally, if you're in juvenile court, the juvenile court judge only has jurisdiction over that child till they're 21. This is the only thing I'm aware of where that jurisdiction, well, or does it? I mean, normally, if I'm a juvenile judge, I've never felt that I could do more than require him to do X till he's 21. Now, all of a sudden, the juvenile judge, I mean, do they have jurisdiction? Don't they have jurisdiction? Does that order expire when he turns 21?
Right. Justice Meyer Henry, I think it goes back to Binders, which again I did not hear ZB comment about. Binders states that it creates the registration, which you're talking about, after 21. The registration creates no affirmative disability or punitive restraint running from registration itself. And with that premise, whether it's 21, whether they turn 35, this is not a punitive response. Matter of fact, this court said it is closer to the warning of the community of a health hazard.
But the jurisdiction is the issue that I almost have. I mean, the jurisdiction of juvenile court runs out for sure by the time he's 21. And
it does, Your Honor.
So how, you know, what happens? The order's done. The jurisdiction's gone.
Absolutely. There's no, and I don't see that there is necessary a jurisdiction, because the sex offender is required to register, continue to register, and then, and only if he violates the law by not registering, then does it become an issue of jurisdiction. Then he can be subject to arrest. Throughout ZB's brief, there's this overall concept of the best interest of the child, that should somehow apply universally. 26785 says proceedings under this chapter and chapter 268A, 268B, and 268C shall be in the best interest of the child. It says nothing about 2224B. The best interest of the child is not the function, or it is not covered by 2678.
Why don't they just take the whole sex offender issues out of juvenile court, then, if that's their intent? Why did they leave him as possibly, I mean, they still allow the prosecutor to make the decision to try him in juvenile court, and they let the judge decide whether, even if they don't, that he can go back to juvenile court. Why, I mean, there's a dual messages here as a society, is that on the one hand, you've got, they don't get certain rights, they don't get a jury trial, when they're tried in juvenile court, and yet they get this, and everything else runs out when they're 21. To my recollection, the statute indicates that rehabilitation is our concern with children. I mean, we don't hold them totally to the same standard and everything. So, aren't there mixed messages here that we have to deal with?
Your Honor, I cited In re G.W., an Illinois case where there was lifetime registration for a juvenile who was 12 years of age. And it stated, quote, given the shift in the purpose and policy of the Juvenile Court Act to include the protection of the public from juveniles and holding juveniles accountable, as well as the serious problems presented by juvenile sex offenders, we find no merit in J.W.'s claim that requiring him to register as a sex offender for life is at odds with the purpose and policy of the Juvenile Court Act.
Do you know if Illinois also provides, which almost all the states do except South Dakota, ability to at least have a hearing on whether or not that it's in a violent enough that it should be, or it's a risk to the society, or at some point get it removed?
Well, a lot of states, Your Honor, have gone to an offense-based mm-hmm. determination and not offender. You're making reference to an offender base where there may be a blue ribbon panel of psychologists, law enforcement individuals who will hear and determine whether they believe this person is a potential risk. Many states have gone to an offender based, and that is what South Dakota has. And as was cited in Connecticut Department of Public Safety and in the JR case, it said the fact that the respondent tried to prove that he was not currently a risk. Okay, that he wanted to prove that is not an issue or a factor in the sex offender registry. All right? Since we have an offense-based determination, the legislature, on its own wisdom or not, has chosen that is the way it will determine the potential danger of a sex offender in the future. I think it's very important to realize that all three sex offenses that can be registered of a juvenile, that juvenile can get removed from the registry within 10 years. It is possible unless you do a sex offense against an individual 13 years of age or younger. And in this case, we had the rape of a 15-year-old against a 7 and 9-year-old. This is why ZV is registered. And this is why I believe when we read minors and we read the concern that the legislature had regarding the protection of society and protection of other children from ZVs, that the registry's out there, and the neighbor lady gets to realize that a ZV is next to them when she allows her children to go over and play with them.
What's the statute that allows them to get off in 10 years? What's the number of that? Do you have it?
Twenty-two, twenty-four B, 19.
That only applies to adults.
Adults and juveniles likewise are allowed to petition to receive off, as mentioned.
JV wouldn't. This statute wouldn't apply to him
because his victim was 13 years of age or younger. In the same way, that would be with an adult. If an adult victim was 13 years of age or younger. But the remaining, except for statutory rape, the remaining of all the other adult crimes, they are on the entire time. They are on for life. That's what the current law is.
Could the state have prosecuted ZB as an adult?
Obviously, if there was a transfer, I think there could be.
Okay. And
I don't know the specifics, Justice Avery.
And, of course, if they'd have got him transferred to be tried as an adult, then he would have been entitled to a jury trial, possibly a suspension of imposition, a sentence, and so forth.
Possibly.
Thank you.
Possibly.
Did he admit to this, or was there a trial?
Pardon me?
Remind me, did he admit to this, or
there
was
it admission.
A trial?
There was a admission. With that, I guess I would come back to my original argument that I believe minors is very important, both when you look at the due process analysis, the equal protection analysis, the fact, fundamentally, as this court has stated, that sex offender registry is not a penal result. but rather remedial. It is a warning to the public. The Minders points out that the point of it is the protection of our children, our weakest and most vulnerable. As a result of that, I see that it is very narrowly tailored, although in the rational basis test, that's not necessary. It is very narrowly tailored that there are only three crimes that are subject to registration. A juvenile can also get off later on. It does not require a juvenile who is 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, or 14 years of age to register. Only those who are 15 years of age or older who commit three particular crimes. And based on that, I believe that what we see in the statutes, both constitutionally, that it is in the best interest of the children of the state of South Dakota, that they are aware who out there could potentially hurt them. If there's no other questions with the court, that's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Stroman. Ms. Reindel, you have 10 minutes.
I would first like to address the issue, as pointed out by Mr. Stroman, the 2224B19 would have allowed JB and those like him that have admitted or been adjudicated for this particular crime to petition the circuit court. Because, as he pointed out, the victim or victims were under the age of 13, that provision is not available to him. In addition to the fact that there were two crimes based on subsection 4, he likewise would be prohibited from availing himself of the opportunities afforded in section 19. The classification, then, that Mr. Stroman would like you to put him in is that of a juvenile. He is not a juvenile that is afforded the protections of section 19. He is not a juvenile that is afforded the protections of not registering because he is 15. And yet we have a situation that is created only by the combination of our statutory framework that had JB stipulated to transfer to adult court with an agreement with the state, and the court had so found that it was contrary to his best interest to remain in juvenile court, he would have protections available to him that he does not have today, despite the fact that he is today a juvenile, a child, treated in our system, and had he done a transfer, he would have been an adult.
But he'd also be facing a potential life sentence in prison, too.
That's correct, Justice. But
whereas under the juvenile system, he's going to be released in all practicality when he's 18.
The points that the JB is trying to point to the court regarding the violations of his equal protection rights, though, are strictly today due to the application of 2224B2 and 10 due to the sexual offender registration, Justice. The other fact that Justice Meyer Henry pointed out, which was that the normally juvenile jurisdiction expires at the age of 21. I didn't hear Mr. Stroman actually answer the question, which is if in fact the dispositional order of Judge John Bastian required him to register pursuant to 2224B2 until for lifetime, which is what the statute requires, what does happen when ZB hits on December 31st, his 21st birthday?
Wouldn't you have to move the court to have it removed from the from the statute? Have it removed from the notice?
That's exactly what I was getting to, Justice Sabers. That is possibly a remedy available to ZB, but not until his 21st birthday. And it brings up a whole other situation, which is that of jurisdiction, which I don't believe is right at the present time. The other point that Mr. Stroman wants to continue this court to focus on is that...
Couldn't you go into court at this time and ask that that be, instead of a lifetime notification, that it be limited to age 21 when the jurisdiction is lost?
Justice, that's a potential. I don't feel it would be successful in light of the mandatory language of 2224B2. I further submit that when one looks at the penal versus remedial dichotomy and designations that Mr. Stroman and the state offered. The minor's case was specifically an ex post facto case. It clearly stated that the standard and the analysis to be done was that of remedial versus penal. While I do not in any way disagree with the validity of a state function or governmental interest of protection of children, I would also submit that this court specifically for over a century has advocated the principle of parens patriae, which, based on case law of this court going back to the 70s, clearly states that it is an obligation of our state, of our government, to have an interest in the treatment and care of children, all children in the state. And I submit, then, based on the state's determination and that of the courts, because a petition for transfer was not brought forward, that J.B. is a child and therefore should be cloaked in the protection of the juvenile justice system, specifically Title 26. And that when you look at the conflict created by then, the imposition of the sex offender registration laws, that conflict must be resolved. And I submit that it could not have been the legislative intent to create that divergence. That is an unreasonable and absurd result. Because of the 2006 amendments to the statutes that then made this public access, that it is the citizen down the road that can merely get on his internet and see ZB's face and identifying information and could drive to where he lives. We then have stripped that child away from the protections and the privacy and confidentiality rights afforded by Title 26. The fact that then normally pursuant to Title 26, for which he is adjudicated and part of our system, has jurisdiction ending at 21, I think creates an inherent violation of his rights, because now not only is he, in my opinion, as a child, stripped of his rights of equal protection, but at the time he then becomes an adult at 21, he continues to have the label of sex offender for actions that he committed as a child when he was supposedly afforded the protections of confidentiality. Minders is an important case and has been because it did for the first time have an examination of the sex offender registration laws that South Dakota first enacted in 1994. I don't doubt the importance of that case. I submit, though, that its application to this particular case is not only ill-advised, but not appropriate. Minders was a 19-year-old. Minders was convicted as an adult. The principles and the policies set forth in Minders for the reasons for the sexual registration laws, I do not take issue with. But then to further then do an analysis of penal versus remedial, when in fact that was because it was an ex post facto argument by counsel, I think clouds the issue when the focus should be whether or not ZB's constitutional rights have been violated.
Specifically, and some changes too have. I mean, one of the parts of the analysis indicated that the court at that time was basing it partly on the wide, that there wasn't public, there wasn't such a wide public dissemination of the information, that law enforcement and so forth had the data and the information, but the public had to go to the police station to get the information. That's changed since Minders, hasn't it?
That's correct, Justice. Minders is a 2000 case, and at that time, the public was required to drive down to their local law enforcement, police department, or sheriff's office and ask for specific sex offender registration information. In fact, respectfully citing Justice Konenkamp, that was a major distinction in that the illustration was that the information that citizen was obtaining, because in part this person was an adult, by driving down to their police station, was, I quote, the same information that can be learned by those who are spectators at the offender's hearing or who read a newspaper article about the case. Obviously, the citizen would not be allowed of any of that information in this case because it's ZB and he's a juvenile. I further would point out that Justice Konenkamp further, I respectfully cite, made the point that because of the specific restrictions of Title 127, which address our public laws and public records, that there would not then be wide public dissemination of this information. In fact, this is not your poster on every corner case. I submit now not only do we have a poster on every corner with this child's face on it, labeling him and branding him a sexual offender, a sexual predator, but we have a poster in every living room, public library, school system where a child or an adult can do three keystrokes and there's that child's face. And I believe based on an equal protection analysis that is in violation of maybe not fundamental rights, although I'm not necessarily stating that it isn't fundamental in light of the statutory giving of that right based on Title 26 to my clients. But at a minimum, it is a setup of an arbitrary class, a 15-year-old with this specific violation and adjudication, that I can see no correlation between the reasons for the designation. And for that reason, I ask the court to rule that SCCL 2224B2 and its companion cases and statutes, or excuse me, that the statutes that accompany it are unconstitutional as applied to ZB. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll be in recess for 10 minutes.